All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. All right, you guys, on the line, I've got Alan McLeod from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, where they don't believe in stuff. And this one is called, A CIA Officer Has a Headache. Media Blame Russia. Ugh. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm doing very well.
I thought we were done with this when the news came out a year or something or so ago that the gigantic brainwave, concussion weapon sonic attack by the Russians down there in Cuba was determined to have been crickets on their mating call. Oops. And so, but now, no, I guess the reason this article exists is because it's by Julia Ioffe, or how do you say her horrible name, the Russiagate truther lady?
I think it's Ioffe, yeah.
Ioffe, okay. So she is notoriously one of the worst Russiagate truthers in the whole history of Russiagate since July 2016. And here she's written, you counted them, 9,000 words on mysterious Russian microwave brain rays.
That's right. I mean, Ioffe managed to publish this article with GQ, which is based off of a CIA agent's experience in Moscow. His name is Mark Polyamoropoulos, right? And what he said is that a little while ago, he was in Moscow during the winter, and he suddenly started to feel really bad. He had a headache. He was dizzy. He felt a little nauseous. And so he felt like he was almost dying, it sounded like, according to the GQ article anyway. But the whole story seems to have been riddled with inconsistencies. I mean, first of all, I mean, Ioffe and Polyamoropoulos seemed to suggest that it wasn't, a headache, it wasn't a migraine or anything like that. They suspected it was some sort of Russian microwave cannon that was being targeted at him. But the whole story seems to be completely inconsistent because, for one, it has a lot of CIA denials saying that Polyamoropoulos is pretty much just making this up. Secondly, his story seems inconsistent as well because only a few hours later, he says to Ioffe that he decided to travel from Moscow to St. Petersburg, which is hundreds of miles. And then after that, he went Christmas shopping in the middle of a Russian winter, and then went sightseeing and went to a few dive bars. So the story of him almost dying because the Russians attacked him doesn't seem to fit with the facts that that he just decided to have a nice little jolly time afterwards in the next day.
Well, and he even says that it happened twice, and the second time he was at a very, they say, posh Moscow restaurant with his family. So that's a very well-aimed cannon, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that Ioffe even says in her article that he went back to the United States and the symptoms continued, and that he was diagnosed with a condition which basically means is he's got a trapped nerve in his neck, which leads to headaches, nausea, and dizziness, and it's a relatively common thing. And yet, despite all of this, Ioffe decides to present this as some sort of devious Putin-led assault on brave American boys. Mm-hmm. You get the impression that Ioffe is that sort of person who, if she was given a Rorschach test, any sort of painting that she saw, she would see Vladimir Putin's face in it, wouldn't she?
Right. Yeah, I saw it was just a few months ago. She was tweeting something out about how, yeah, the media really got carried away on this Russiagate stuff, and you guys should be more careful in the future or something like that. And someone just had, a good handful of screenshots of her believing all of the absolute dumbest Russiagate lies that were all, of course, gospel truth to her, Steele dossier stuff and, nothing sure. Too stupid for her to believe.
She actually accused the official Twitter account of the Arkansas Democrat Press, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, which is one of the oldest newspapers in the United States. It's over 200 years old. She accused them of being a Russian disinfo operation because they were using what she called Russian speech marks in their text, which is the little chevrons, these little arrows. It seems completely ridiculous because, you know, this is a well-established newspaper. It's been around for so long. She got completely canned on Twitter for that. And I've even heard that the journalists there now call each other Svetlana and Ivan, just mocking her relentlessly.
Yeah. Well, that's something else. So now, okay, on this specific story, the CIA officer. So he goes to Russia. He has this horrible headache that we're supposed to believe is some kind of microwave weapon that caused it. Then he went out and had a great day the rest of the day. Then it happens to him again at a restaurant. He's surrounded by other innocent people who presumably did not also come down with the terrible brainwave weapon headache thing. Then he comes home. His symptoms remain, which, okay, fine, maybe the Russians did some permanent damage to him or something like that. But then you say, and she says in the article that he went to all of these specialists, and then they finally concluded what the problem must be. And then if you could get back to that diagnosis and then the connection that she makes between that and the supposed microwave weapon. I mean, you said that this is a relatively common problem that people have, but maybe it could have been caused by a microwave gun or something, huh? Is that in there? Do they say the cause and effect here?
Well, that's pretty much her assertion. Yeah, it's called occipital neuralgia. Obviously, migraines are a problem which about one in seven people around the world have, so that's very, very common.
I knew the Russians were after me too, you know? All right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he has nerve damage in his neck, which could have happened in any way. It is possible, perhaps. It's not completely beyond the levels of believability that this could have happened during some sort of like sound cannon or microwave cannon, these heretofore science fiction weapons which we're not even sure even exist. But it seems much more likely that this story is much more mundane than we're led to believe, frankly.
Yeah, for real. It reminds me of the 9/11 truthers who said that there was a space beam that, you know, disintegrated the towers. Wow, that's a pretty cool space beam. Can you tell me anything else about the space beam that did that? No, sorry, we don't have any information about the space beam, but it must have been one because obviously you can't see a beam and there's nobody standing there, so it must have been from space. And it's invisible, so that fits. And you know, it's conclusion first, evidence later.
There's a concept in logic called Occam's razor, which usually means that if you've got a situation, generally the most mundane or the outcome that is requiring the least amount of steps or things added on tends to be the most logical explanation. But this really hasn't happened in this story, which, you know, the most logical explanation is the diagnosis that he was given by these American doctors when he got home, that he has this nerve condition, which is pretty common. But for some reason, rather than that being the story, which, you know, wouldn't get printed, there's this massive conspiracy concocted, which includes Russia, China, Cuba, and pretty much every other country the US is trying to go to war with, using these huge sound cannons or microwave, these weird science fiction weapons, all to slightly inconvenience a number of American diplomats and
Right.
officials.
Yeah,
I
it's like
mean,
they're the
listen.
most deadly poisons in the world that make their victims slightly sick for a few days.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's much easier ways of inconveniencing American operatives than doing this, you know. They could, like, I don't know, like drain their cars of gas or something like that.
Yeah.
There would be much,
No
you know,
hot
you don't have.
water in the hotel room.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, okay. All right. Now, I hate the CIA so much and every individual who works for it. Whatever happened to them, I'm happy. So it's hard for me to not say that. And actually, if nothing happened to them and this is all their own, you know, self-victimization, mass hysteria, then that's even better. You know, I have to get out of here. I can't take it anymore. The assault, it's too much. And then it turns out it's just crickets, Cuban crickets mating. And you're a hysterical, pathetic person. And they must, you know, they've all learned that by now. They finally had to admit it. Some scientists came out and said, we got the sound here on your recording. It's crickets. But in Julia Yaffe's piece here for GQ, she says that the CIA and their doctors say that, oh, no, there's so many wide and varied victims with the same sort of symptoms, except they're all a little bit different. That's how they get you. But that a psychosomatic thing or mass hysteria or severe annoyance at the sound of crickets could not be responsible for the wide and varied brain injuries these people have suffered, Alan.
Yeah, it really is extraordinary. This Cuba story is, if anything, crazier. I mean, can you imagine what would happen if Russian diplomats in Washington, D.C. started complaining that they were being attacked with some sort of crazy, terrifying sound, and they even recorded it, and Russian media portrayed this as just this awful attack on our brave diplomats.
We'd ridicule them off the face of the earth. We wouldn't even need bombs. We'd just laugh at them to death.
Yeah, but I mean, imagine if it was like, you know, they played the recording and it was like the howls of local dogs, and they would be saying, you know, this is an American attack on us. You'd be like, this is absolutely crazy, and why are the media taking this seriously? But Yaffe's piece was signal boosted by a ton of really reputable outlets, like, you know, the Washington Post even did an entire editorial about it. You know, other outlets like the New York Post, NPR, Mother Jones, a whole load of Western outlets in the UK and Australia and New Zealand as well were running with this story like it had any legs at all. It's just remarkable to me.
Mm. But now, so what do you make of the claims that, but they do have these real symptoms, and usually when people are, you know, hypochondriacs, they're kind of wallowing in it, where these people really just want to go back to work and they just can't because of something terrible has happened to them. I guess you said earlier, and I'm sorry because I only got about two-thirds of the way through her piece this morning, but you say that the CIA, they're on both sides of this story then, I guess. If they're saying that, they're also giving official denials to GQ that this is true?
Yeah, I mean, the GQ article actually kind of tacitly acknowledges this. I mean, it says at one point the CIA told Yaffe that many of her claims were, quote, simply not true. And Polly Maropoulos claims that the agency flatly told him that he was, quote, making it up. And so that's what the CIA officially has to say about this. Polly Maropoulos is very annoyed, and so is Yaffe, that his injuries are not being treated as combat injuries. And so he basically has to pay his own way for all of these weird and wonderful medical tests that he's getting right now. So, yeah, I mean, that to me seems to undermine the credibility of the story even further. And yet GQ still saw fit to publish this. It's quite extraordinary.
Yeah. And then, like you say, NPR and The Washington Post and the rest of the CIA media, you know, trumpet it as loud as they can, you know. And I don't mean CIA media, like they definitely got marching orders from Langley to do so, but just they all know that anything that they can say to smear and attack Russia is, you know, will be featured prominently. And if the story's debunked later, that's GQ's problem, not theirs. You know, just like Charlie Savage, they're not saying this is true. They're just saying that someone is saying that it might be true, and that's good enough.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the target of the story is quite convenient for a lot of American outlets, Russia. It makes Putin, the Kremlin, and Russia generally look bad. And they have spent 4 years doing that to various degrees, often to a very large extent in some of those cases, pushing a Russiagate narrative, which time after time has been punctured. But it doesn't seem to matter how often the official story gets dented, like with the Mueller report or anything like that. It seems to just continue on with this inertia of its own. And I think that's because of the utility of it. I mean, it sells newspapers, it gets clicks, it makes Russia look bad, it drives liberals into a frenzy, which which makes them think of the FBI and CIA as their friends. There's so many positive things for the centrist establishment. I mean, for the Democrats as well, it means that they don't have to come to terms with the fact that they lost the election to a game show host. You know, they don't have to think, oh, well, maybe we should cede ground to Bernie Sanders or any of the progressives. We lost because of Vladimir Putin. We didn't lose because our candidate was terrible. We didn't lose because we didn't offer the American public any sort of qualitative improvements in their lives. It was all because of a few Facebook ads. And I think this is really why the story continues to just have this its own self-driving inertia, despite any sort of relevance or despite not really having much of a connection to any sort of facts.
Hey, y'all, let me tell you about the Libertarian Institute's latest book, What Social Animals Owe to Each Other, by our executive editor, the great Sheldon Richman. For decades, Richman has been explaining libertarianism to the left from the left. He makes a strong case that any honest liberal, progressive, or leftist actually should be libertarians, since in fact it is freedom itself that provides what y'all want. Richman argues the case for liberty and peace, the human spirit and social cooperation, for true liberalism, libertarianism, against the corrupt forces of statism, corporatism, and violence. What Social Animals Owe to Each Other by Sheldon Richman. Now available at libertarianinstitute.org/books. Hey guys, Scott Horton here from Mike Swanson's great book, The War State. It's about the rise of the military-industrial complex and the power elite after World War II, during the administrations of Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, and Jack Kennedy. It's a very enlightening take on this definitive era on America's road to world empire. The War State by Mike Swanson. Find it in the right-hand margin at scotthorton.org. Hey y'all, Scott here. If you want a real education in history and economics, you should check out Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Tom and a really great group of professors and experts have put together an entire education of everything they didn't teach you in school but should have. Follow through from the link in the margin at scotthorton.org for Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Yeah, no, it is. It's completely crazy. I mean, you look at the thing with the supposed Russian hack. I don't know if you're writing on this right now, but, you know, supposedly the Russians are behind this Solar Winds hack. Maybe they are. And yet, all we have in the media is that intelligence officials think that it might be so, and that is by far good enough. By a million miles, that's good enough for virtually every outlet in America to say, we know the Russians are doing it, because the CIA told the New York Times that they think they might be, and then therefore, look, another example of Donald Trump's treason, where he refuses to stand up to Putin and do anything about this Russian attack on our country. It's like Pearl Harbor, except, you know, 3,000 people died there, and they didn't even turn off a single light switch here. Maybe they downloaded some documents or something. I don't know. But anyway, it's like Pearl Harbor, and Donald Trump refuses to defend us, even though the accusers themselves, like, for example, David Sanger at the New York Times, admits this is just supposition. This is an assessment based on scant data. Somebody hacked something. It looks pretty sophisticated. Who else could have done it? And that was what he said on the New York Times podcast explaining. He said, there's not, from everyone I'm talking to in the intelligence community, there's not a lot of doubt about this. In other words, there's zero proof whatsoever. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, there was a great Middle Eastern correspondent called Robert Fisk who just died very recently. And he was really dismayed about how we've started to take anonymous intelligence officials' words as gospel. You know, we have to remember that as journalists, it's our job to question those in power. And there really aren't that many more powerful people than CIA agents. And so even if somebody from the CIA or FBI or NSA goes on the record as saying the Russians did this, we have to remember that it's their job to spread misinformation, often even to the American public. And so their credibility is shot from the beginning. But a lot of these leaks about SolarWinds are coming from anonymous intelligence officials who aren't even willing to put their name to these accusations, despite the fact that there's going to be no negative consequences for blaming Russia for anything. And so I think the level of credibility of these sources is so low, especially when we've had 4 years of this going on. I mean, you might remember the DNI report from a few years ago, which was supposed to be cast iron proof that Russia meddled in the election. And what did we get out of that? Oh, well, RT had the Green Party candidate on, and Abby Martin interviewed Occupy Wall Street protesters, and this was supposedly their cast iron proof that Russia was sowing disinformation and discord. So I think I will stand pat on blaming Russia for this hack until something a bit more concrete comes out.
You know, what I like about this article here, I'm skipping back and forth while we're talking between your piece at Fair and Yoffie's piece, Yoffie, whatever, her piece at GQ here. And it's so much fun. It reminds me of these hysterical housewife stories of, I think someone tried to human traffic my child today because this truck drove by us twice. Or some guy looked at me funny at the mall. And then these go viral. And then someone finally says, lady, you're just making this up. And this one, a White House staffer was walking her dog, and then a guy walked by her, and then her dog seized up, and then her ears started ringing, and this thing happened. And you could just see her writing about this on Facebook to her housewife friends, that like this guy, and he was in a van. What do you think was probably in that van? Probably like some science fiction stuff, right? And it's all just made up, ridiculous, hysterical women making up stuff. Not that men don't do the same thing, but I'm just saying, we've seen this before 1,000 times. We know what it looks like, you know?
Sure. I mean, I'm not even contending that these officers, these diplomats, these agents are getting sick or feeling these symptoms like headaches or cramps or anything. But the reality is that over 1 billion people around the world have experienced a migraine before. And so it is perfectly reasonable to assume that hundreds of millions of people every year are going to have a migraine for the first time and perhaps not know what's going on. It seems that that is a much more likely explanation, or some sort of mystery illness, or paranoia, or even them just making stuff up and telling the media. Those all seem like more logical explanations, if you think about Occam's razor, than this sort of global conspiracy to, mildly inconvenience some mid-level NSA staffer.
Well, I think I have a conspiracy theory that explains it, and that would be that Putin, rather than trying to mildly inconvenience these people, he's trying to humiliate and embarrass the United States by slightly inconveniencing them just enough to make them cry about it like this and sound like completely unreasonable, whiny little children and embarrass the United States.
Fareed Zakaria wrote an article in the Washington Post called "Russia Just Hasn't Just Hacked Our Computer Systems, It's Hacked Our Minds." And it does sound
Speaking
kind
for
of crazy.
himself, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, but there is a truth to that, in which Vladimir Putin is living rent-free in the heads of so many people in positions of power across the United States and Western Europe right now that they are thinking about him constantly, and everything that goes bad in their life seems to be his problem, Milk in the fridge turns sour. That must have been a Russian agent doing that. Or, oh, the power gone out. The power's gone out. That must be Putin, calling in his friends in Siberia to, switch the gas off. Who knows? It just this story just doesn't seem to be dying. I thought it might start losing its salience once Joe Biden had won the election, but it seems that Russia is going to be another story come 2021, and perhaps even further than that.
Yeah, they're going to keep this going as long as they can. I mean, she talks about in here, in this piece, about how they've reoriented all these CIA offices around Europe. Created new Russia bureaus within them and all of these things. The whole thing is a dirty snowball. So you have more and more and more national security state people whose careers are tied up in pursuing this BS. And, one thing, no, this is why I was glad that this guy has a headache, whatever caused it, was he essentially accuses Trump of treason for that on the anecdote that he told the Russians that the Israelis had a spy inside ISIS. And the entire media made a big deal about this. The Washington Post published it. And the way that they published the story was that Donald Trump had committed treason by burning this source. But he only told the Russians. It was the Washington Post who burned the source. It was the newspaper and the media accusing Trump of treason were the only ones who told the secret. And somewhere in there, buried, they never said out loud, but somewhere buried in there was the idea or the premise or the assumption somehow or something that the Russians were going to tell ISIS that the Israelis had penetrated their group. But that's stupid. The Russians were bombing ISIS. The Russians are friends with the Israelis. Trump telling Vladimir Putin that was not, or it wasn't Putin, it was the foreign minister, Lavrov, or Kislyak, the ambassador. For him to tell them that is no different than him telling the deputy secretary of defense that. You know, like they're not exactly cleared to know, but what difference does it make? And then this guy says, yeah, that would be just like if George W. Bush brought bin Laden to the White House after 9/11 and said, eh, we're good. Huh? What's the parallel there? No, this would be like if George Bush invited Putin to the White House after 9/11 and said, guess what? We have a spy inside Al-Qaeda. We're going to kill him. And Putin said, good, high five. That's what this is like. That's what this is like. This has nothing to do. What? And then he says stuff like that. That really alarmed us considerably. Some of it, he added, made his head explode. So here's your coup. Here's your explanation for Russiagate. The CIA can't tell their ass from their elbow, can't tell their ally in the war on terrorism from their enemy who they support in Syria or did for 5 years there. And so they've got their treason all backwards and they're accusing the president of treason when they're the traitors. And then in order to protect us from his treason, they engage in some more of it by framing him, not really treason, but treacherous, traitorous sedition of some kind, by falsely accusing him of treason with the Kremlin for 3 years. And that was it. It was because he said things that they didn't like. And we all know that the CIA, in order to form a more perfect union, has ordained the Constitution and allowed the executive branch to exist, and it exists at their pleasure.
You know, one of the most worrying things about all of this is the rhetoric which is used against Russia, talking about it as an enemy, as a mortal threat. You know, Donald Trump is actually no friend of Russia. He's been arming Ukrainian groups that are distinctly anti-Russian. He has let all sorts of nuclear treaties with Russia lapse to the point where there's basically none that is preventing a new nuclear buildup. I don't want to see a Cold War, let alone a hot war with Russia. And yet, the way the Democrats are talking, they are constantly out-hawking the Republicans on Russia, which is setting Joe Biden up for a position where I don't know what he's going to be able to do vis-a-vis Moscow. I mean, are we going to see a new Cold War breaking out in the 2020s? It's quite possible that we will.
Yeah.
This is the sort of rhetoric that can lead to mistakes, and these mistakes could be completely deadly for us all.
Yeah. Well, for all of us, I mean, not to be too hyperbolic about it, sounds too alarmist to talk about, but in fact, the Americans and the Russians have about 4,000 deployed H-bombs, and that's enough to kill humanity. That's omnicide, as Daniel Ellsberg calls it. It would be the result of a full-scale war between America and Russia. And then wouldn't that just be fitting for the whole thing to break out over a bunch of total made-up nonsense? Pretend microwave weapons and all of this just conspiracy retardation. I know it was like this during the last Cold War too, in the McCarthy era, where, you know, even then there actually were leftists. So then the idea was, if you're a hard leftist, then you are loyal to this foreign power, which was not right, but it led to this kind of witch hunt attitude where anybody could be a communist. You're not just looking at communists in the State Department, but communists in your church and communists at your work and communists in your neighborhood, and communists everywhere. And this kind of just madness. How could we make that same mistake again? Didn't that go down in history as the second most embarrassing thing America ever did after Prohibition? or something like that, and we're doing it again.
Yeah, I mean, that again, but we're talking about what the utility is. And, you know, with Russiagate, there is a utility of like pulling liberals towards the state, of the Democrats not having to look at their own failures, the media selling more newspapers and making more money. Yep. And yeah, just the government in general becoming more powerful.
Yeah, and Lockheed and selling more H-bombs.
Yeah, likewise with the old Cold War, there was a utility in that sort of communist hysteria. It managed to uproot all sorts of people from relatively powerful positions, like in the media or in education or in Hollywood or anything. And it managed to create a society which was much more dedicated to the pursuit of profit, when, you know, people like union organizers or, you know, leftists or whoever, you know, were taken out of these positions of power and, you know, taken away and replaced with like strong conservatives or what have you. It led to a situation where, yeah, the United States was completely free to pursue an agenda of the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer.
Yep. And, you know, the leftists who were really good on Russiagate and never believed in it, even though it was against Donald Trump, who they hated, but they were against it just because it wasn't true. They also, many of them, Taibbi and Aaron Maté and many of these others, also warned that they're going to use this against the left. You know, liberal Democrats, they might love this stuff, but real committed progressives and leftists who have an ideology that's more important than their partisan, you know, party identification here, you're going to really regret this, because they're going to use this stuff against us. And especially once we've established that we all believe in it, and quote unquote, we, I'm a libertarian, but you know what I mean, and that it's a legitimate line of argument, then they're going to use it against us and we won't be able to say anything. And then what happened? They put it out. Vladimir Putin wants Bernie Sanders to get the nomination because everybody knows Trump will have a way easier time beating him, says the Washington Post. And then the left takes it in one gulp because they've been completely primed, or not, maybe not the left, but the liberals certainly were just completely primed to believe that already. And so, you know, you are going to have that very same effect, for good and for ill, you know, of having those voices marginalized, mostly for ill. And yeah, it could be a real problem because, you know, our foreign policy is based on all these things, too. And so, for example, you know, just the way that they frame things, you know, are we spreading? It used to be we were spreading NATO in Europe, just because it's peace and security and stability, and the more people who are, more countries that are members of it, the more stable and peaceful everything is. But now the narrative is we're defending from Russian aggression. And the Russians are coming, and we know they're coming because of how evil they are. Look what they did with their microwave gun. You know, they slightly inconvenienced this guy, whatever. And so, I mean, that's really dangerous, where you have, you know, militarism and you know, a framework of distrust and presumption of malign motives on both sides against each other, totally unnecessarily, and where, frankly, NATO shares a border with Russia now in the Baltic states.
That's right. I mean, if you read the foreign policy journals and, you know, these think tanks, they've got a word for it. It's called defending forward, which means putting these bases right on Russia's border, right up against them so they can't breathe. And this is supposedly to defend the United States and Western Europe from Russian aggression. And yet, well, you know, I can see maybe if you're from Lithuania or Latvia, you might feel a little bit intimidated by Russia. But if you're from France or Spain or the United Kingdom, the idea that Russia is going to, you know, roll the tanks through is completely farcical. And, you know, let alone if you live in the United States, it presents no threat whatsoever to the domestic security of any major country.
Right.
The only serious threat there is the threat of a potential accidental nuclear confrontation that could happen at any time, and almost has a number of times during the Cold War. Right. And that threat is being drastically increased right now. And that is something that we should really worry about, Scott.
Yep, absolutely right. All right, you guys. So this is Alan McLeod. He's at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. That's fair.org. And man, they're good on stuff. They've been like this for 25, 30 years or something, debunking lies over there. I love them. This one is called "A CIA Officer Has a Headache. Media Blame Russia." Thank you again for your time, Alan.
Good to be with you.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.